The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So while we're waiting for the them to come back, we don't want them to miss any of the profound things and teachings I'll say. But perhaps you have any questions or concerns or comments you'd like to make? Especially comments about this last discussion you had before the break. Or
when you asked how loving kindness can be a resource in overcoming...
In dealing with aversion, yeah.
Oh, or what's the prompt for loving kindness?
Yes.
Kind of a negative one popped into my head first of all, which is, well, this aversion doesn't... and this, it will, don't comport with my self-image.
So you bet. I bet if I see. So this is not good for my self-image. So I better quickly do something.
I don't want to think of myself as someone who has this much ill will.
Great. Well, I think that's. Well, I think it's great that you saw it and great that you admit it. It's that's the spirit. That's the attitude in which I think this whole practice unfolds best. Is just to kind of put it out there and say, "This is what I see." It was great. Thank you. And you're not alone with that. Yeah.
Kind of opposite. I was actually really pleased in the open discussion in particular to see how many strategies I have that I already use
for
maintaining and supporting loving kindness, because I actually do think of myself as a person who tends much more towards aversion. And it kind of helped me see that that's not necessarily true.
Great. Thank you. Bingo.
I think in certain discussions I've had with people, not necessarily in my little group, it's as if we think that this condition is sort of hardwired into us, but at the same time we understood that over time with practice we feel its grip lessening on us. So there must be some way that... it isn't hardwired, because it can change, and we can learn from it, and loving kindness can predominate.
Yes, not hardwired. You know, in Buddhism, the idea is that there are no things at all. Things don't exist. Everything's a process. All things are processes. So everything's an activity. So that's particularly true for the mind. Everything in the mind, there's no solid, in a sense, from a Buddhist point of view, there's no hardware in the mind. The mind is only software. And every once in a while, there's a virus that gets in. Yes. And so because it's all process, it's all activity, the activity can be shaped and changed and redirected and redone. And so it's a very, very optimistic and hopeful view, I feel, about the human heart and mind. And so we don't have to be stuck. Anybody else?
I just noticed that I'm happier when I like people. And and that if I'm angry at someone, it's a pretty clear tip-off that I'm unhappy.
Great. Thank you. So, who else still needed a handout? I think you needed a handout? She has them here. You have any more? Yeah. But that's the master copy there?
Here. There can be.
Who else needs handouts now? You're the only... If that's the last person I needed, you can give her the master copy.
It's not only the happiness. Yeah. Okay. It comes more than that. It could save person's life from life-threatening illness sometimes.
Yes. Loving kindness.
Loving kindness practice.
Yes.
And, you know, doing in put into your system, actually, it does save your life.
Yes.
From illness.
Yes,
it does.
I
experienced myself.
Beautiful. So not only can it save lives yourself, but also your act of loving kindness might save someone else's life. It makes a big difference that people feel met and seen and supported, and it can for some people's lives it can make a difference. Okay. So, loving kindness is one approach of working with aversion. And it's a very important and valuable one. Sometimes we need to change the mood that we're in, the emotional state we're in order to see more deeply, or see more realistically, or to see in such a way that we can actually change and transform. And aversion, when it's really strong, like an anger, sometimes you get fixated, locked in, we get tight, and it's very hard to budge and move this activity to make a difference. And sometimes loving kindness can lubricate the situation enough that then we can get in there and do some other work. And with the heart of the work of mindfulness is not using an antidote, but is using mindfulness itself to address something like aversion and address all the hindrances. And then we have to understand, I think it's helpful to understand, the hindrances from another point of view. And that is, the hindrances are states of mind that's, when they're present, we're not free. When they're present, we're not free. So when desire is a hindrance, it means we're caught in the desire and being pulled around. Desire has us by the nose and it's pulling us around. You know, it's influencing us and impacting us. So the same thing with aversion or ill will or anger. When it's a hindrance, we've lost our freedom in relationship to it. It has us. There's compulsion as part of it. And you can see it really strongly when we meditate. Because you can sit down and try to meditate. Oh, I'll just let go of my thoughts and sit here quietly and focus on my breathing. Thank you. And no matter what you do, the mind keeps going off into that aversive mind state, or thinking about something, or just kind of swirling away. And you realize that you have your mind is not free. It keeps being pulled away and caught and has a mind of its own. When the mind is free, you could choose whether you pick something up and think about it, whether you put something down. You don't have to follow anything at all. You just, things arise and you just let them be or let them go. So when something is a hindrance, we've lost our freedom. And the important function of mindfulness is to regain that freedom, to reestablish that freedom. So in order to be able to relate to what's happening and be free while we're relating to it. So if there's aversion, and we've lost our freedom in the aversion, if we're captivated by it, or pushed around by it, driven by it, there's clinging to it, if we're resisting it in some kind of... part of the mindfulness is to somehow find an awareness, establish an awareness, so that in being aware of it, we are not caught by it. In being aware of it, we're free of it. This is a very important idea, because it means we don't necessarily have to get rid of something to be free of it. So it's possible to really see the aversion as aversion. Oh, here's aversion. And when you really see it, you're not caught by it. You've got outside its orbit. And you know you're not caught because you can choose what you do, how you relate to it, what you say, what you do. So a little bit, the analogy I kind of like is, if you're at some party or some gathering or something where people are talking up a storm and maybe angry, maybe not, but just talking up a storm and kind of very excited, and they're all kind of, everyone's talking on top of each other and yelling back and forth, and and you're in the middle of it and trying to say your thing and yelling and engaged, and it's wonderful kind of, maybe, or not so wonderful, difficult thing. And then for some reason, you have to leave. Just go to the bathroom. You go outside. And then you come back, but you don't go into the room, but you stand outside on the balcony with a sliding glass door closed. And you look in, and you can't hear a word, but you see all this gestures and movement and faces, and and you say, boy, they're really caught up in it, aren't they? And I'm not. I'm here. Or it could be that you stay in the fray, but somehow you're not caught by it all, you're balanced in the quantum middle of it, and you notice someone else in the group is also that way, and you kind of look at each other knowingly. You know, this is how it is. And you kind of recognize each other's kind of, you're not in the, enmeshed in it, everybody else in. So that kind of quality, not being enmeshed, but knowing what's going on, being present for sure. But then, so this is kind of like the heart of what we're trying to do with mindfulness practice. And the route to doing that, there's a number of routes to doing that, but one of the routes, the key route for us, is using mindfulness, is using our capacity to recognize what's happening now. So learning how to recognize when aversion is present or ill will is present, to really recognize it. And really, and then recognize some of the different elements of that aversion. So for example, there might be very strong justification. I'm justified in being angry at this person. This person's a no good lousy. And so, you know, this person deserves it. But those kinds of arguments just keep us enmeshed. And sometimes you can feel, as you try to say, aversion, aversion. No, it's supposed to be, you know, aversion, that person. And you can feel that kind of pull. And so you have to kind of sort through that and hopefully be convinced enough, have a conviction that it's valuable, it's more valuable to be mindful, to be aware and recognize it, than it is to be pulled into the orbit, into the stream of this kind of aversive behavior or activity. So recognize, here it is. So Jack Kornfield likes to talk about taking the one seat. So just here I am, standing in your own 2 feet, taking the one seat, and in that taking your place here, really fully saying, oh, here is aversion. Now as we stay for it, present for it, it's helpful to actually recognize the elements of aversion. So, the physical elements. What is it like physically? When you're in your body, you're not in the story. Chances are very high that if you're caught in the orbit of aversion, you're in a story connected to it. Or a story is a big part of it. But if you're really connected to your body, you're not really connected, you're not in the story. Or if you're really connected to your body and feel here, then the majority of your attention is in the body, and only a minority is feeding the aversion. Attention is kind of like food. Where your attention goes feeds whatever you pay attention to. And if your attention is unconscious, you're just lost in this thing, not really aware you're doing it, I suspect that the food is even more nourishing for the habit. So you want to avoid kind of being unconscious about it. So what's going on in your body? Connect to your body. Feel the tension, the tightness, the heat, the fixity, whatever is might going on in the body. And have confidence that staying with your body, staying with the sensations of your body, the tensions of your body, is really, really helpful for this process. As you stay with your body, body tension, sensations connected to anger or aversion, something begins shifting. I think there's a natural, almost natural tendency to loosen up, to free up, to kind of get some distance, to process this, to let it kind of move through you. It's not necessarily something you'll see happen. I've sat with a lot of tension over my years of practice, and I've sat there feeling these strong body sensations connected to something, and I'm also sitting there eagerly watching, waiting to see when it goes away. You know, where is it? You know, where is that going away of it? Where is it relaxing, you know? And I learned eventually that often I don't see the change. I don't see where I begin to loosen up or relax or it goes away. I'll sit. I'll go do some walking meditation, come back and sit, and it's gone. Where did it go? And it's the process of being attentive to it that allowed it to shift. But I freed myself from the idea that I have to watch it change, or that I'm responsible to change it. But to really be present is really helpful. And then you can explore and be present for the mental side, the mental energy. The mind also, if there's strong aversion, the mind can feel contracted, it can feel tight, constricted, it can feel frozen, it can feel solid and hard. And so begin exploring, what's the mind feel like when all this aversion is going on? What's the quality of the thinking? Not the thinking, it's not what you're thinking about, but the process of thinking. Is it very loud? Is it harsh? Is it tight? Is it forceful? Is it aggressive? You know, how is it? And again, just be present. Oh, it's like this. It's like this. And as you be present, oh, it's like this, like this. Then recognizing that this is important. As you're mindful of anything you're mindful of, as you're mindful, very, very simply, this is supposed to be a very simple thing, but as you're mindful, recognizing that in the mindfulness, you're not caught. That in the mindfulness, you're a little bit, maybe it's a teeny bit, free or detached in a healthy way from it. It might not be 100%, but it's a little bit kind of stepping out of its orbit. So it helps to make a recognition of that. Oh. And it's an ongoing process to find that. But oh, this is what I'm doing. Because the way in which we get enmeshed, and the way we're kind of in it, this can be so powerful that, and we can believe it's so important, that without some appreciation of the value, the lightening up that happens when we kind of step out of its orbit, it's going to be hard to continue in that process of mindfulness. In that mindfulness, it can be helpful to understand the beliefs that feeding and fueling the aversion. there might be, there's a whole slew of beliefs that can come into play with aversion. Some of them have to do with self-image, some of them have to do with ancient conditioning, some of them have to do with what we believe is right and wrong in the world. So we kind of explore the beliefs and also begin questioning some of these beliefs. So these really have to be this way. Or maybe I can believe this, but does a belief have to be translated into compulsion, into aversion? Then it's also helpful to look at the emotional quality. What's going on emotionally when there's a strong ill will or aversion? And there's a variety of things that go on when there's the aversion itself, which is kind of emotional, the ill will, the hostility, the anger, or whatever it might be, the heat of that. But then there's a whole bunch of other emotions that come into play. Some of them are secondary that follow in the wake of the aversion, and some of them are actually the prompts for aversion itself. So, for example, some people get aversive or angry when they're afraid. And so it might be more useful to notice the the fear than it is to notice the aversion. You have to kind of really be present for the fear. Sometimes aversion is a result of frustrated desire. And and it's more helpful to actually notice, boy, I had a lot of desire. I really wanted that thing. And now that thing or that person I can't have, I'm really angry. And someone has to receive my anger. Might as well be him. And it's the frustrated desire. So to look at the desire, question the desire. Maybe the compulsion, the freedom was already lost in how we related to the desire. So to start teasing apart the different emotions and motivations that are behind or connected to the aversion. As we begin being present and notice these different things, the idea is not to analyze and think more. The idea is to notice the different elements of it so we can find ourselves in the one seat, find ourselves standing on our own two feet. So we find ourselves being present, recognizing what's going on, and in that recognition, not being pulled around by it. In the recognition of it, not having to act in ways we don't want to act, not having to engage in things that we don't want to engage in. So it could be something like, for example, you have a lot of aversion towards someone, and so you can really notice, oh, here I am, here's the heat, here's the tension, I'm really present for this, and here comes a good thought, idea, and you say, oh, I don't have to go there. I can let that go. I don't have to get engaged in that thought. And so there you established your freedom through your power of recognition. This is what's going on. And one of the really beautiful things about mindfulness practice is when the sense of mindfulness or awareness becomes stronger than what you're aware of, or stronger than the pull into what you're aware of. So that you're aware, you find yourself independent. Mindfulness is independent. Knowing is independent of what is known. You know something, but you feel independent of it. You feel not caught by it, not pushed around by it, not oppressed by it. Here you are, and there that is. And that is a really profound, powerful capacity to sense, to really know, to really be present. It's not aloof, it's not distant, it's not kind of shut off, but you're really there for something, but at the same time you know, I'm really not caught by this. I'm aware. I'm aware and not... Make sense? So, in terms of working with aversion then, I believe it's extremely helpful to look for opportunities to practice with aversion. Now, don't look for opportunities to be aversive unless you think, well, if you leave today saying, well, that was kind of interesting, but this is not my issue. I don't have any aversion whatsoever. Then maybe you should go look for some opportunity, a safe opportunity. But otherwise don't go looking for it. I mean, we don't go creating it. But when you find yourself in some kind of aversive situation, you feel ill will, anger, hostility, annoyance, resentment, ire, you know, all these wonderful things, wrath. Say, great, now I can do my homework. Wow, there's a lot, good, good. So for you it's going to be easy. And the more practice you get, it's just like playing an instrument. The more you practice, the better you'll get. So you're lucky. You get to practice a lot. If you practice. If you don't practice, then the aversion, you know. The unfortunate thing is that whatever we frequently do gets reinforced. So if we don't practice with the aversion, don't try to find our presence, and just let the aversion kind of roll through us, it reinforces that habit more and more. Yes?
Did you time this to go with family holiday events?
not intentionally. In fact, when I noticed the connection, I thought, oh, maybe this was a mistake, maybe I should change it, and then maybe I shouldn't do aversion. And I told a few people, and they said, no, this is perfect. This is perfect. So the idea is you want to look, so when there's aversion, look for situations where it's safe, appropriate, where it's, the conditions are right, where you can actually stop, hang out with it, look at it, explore it, feel it, sense it, practice your mindfulness with it. Don't be in a hurry to get rid of it. Get to know it really well by knowing all the different aspects of it. Yes?
Yes, you have just mentioned that one. But I would like to know, when you are in the aversion, such as anger, after some event, and I will notice it. I was angry, but it's still the pull of the power of the anger was, yeah. It's overwhelming.
Yes.
To the aware of the. Aversion.
Yes.
So what, in that case, what would be the good to handle it?
Well, you want to practice, you want to really practice harder, more. So a couple of things you can do is maybe if you can, you sit down and meditate. And then and do the mindfulness while you're meditating. So you close your eyes and you're really there in a fuller way. And then it might be easier to disengage, to be present. And then you want to, and then the mental noting can be very helpful. Anytime you're really caught by something, pulled off by something, mental noting, naming it, can be very helpful, because the naming sometimes helps us free us from that engagement. So, anger, just name it. And then you just want to do the practice, do it, and keep doing it. Until you find yourself free. And you might have to do it over and over and over again. It takes a while. It's not easy, necessarily. and just keep at it. I lost. It's like your mind wanders away, and you start thinking. You come back. Mind wanders away. You come back. Your mind goes into aversion. You come back. Notice that mind goes off aversion. Come back, and you keep practicing. And bit by bit, I think you'll get better. If you can learn to identify the underlying currents that are there, if there's fear, if there's hurt, if there's frustrated desire, these different things, then that can make it a lot easier. Because if you don't understand the roots of the aversion has a lot more power. So in the handout, in the homework or the exercises, one of the maybe the second month or the third month, third week, the roots of aversion. You see that? Is that somewhere? I don't have a copy.
January 11th.
So you see, there's six different roots. So when you get to that week, that's the week where you get to really start looking deeply at how these roots operate for you and your aversion. So then finally, I want to say two more things for today. One has to do, if you look at the quote page, the handout with the quotes, the last quote in the bottom of the page is from the Satipatthana Sutta. And this is the instructions of how to practice mindfulness with ill will. And what I want to draw your attention to here now is the part in bold. Part of mindfulness practice is not only being present for what is, but it also is recognizing the conditions that bring about ill will, understanding the conditions that help you let go of it, understanding the conditions that prevents it from coming in the future. So it's not just simply a matter of using mindfulness, it's also beginning to understand the conditions, what goes on, the whys of this, the process of this. So, and as you understand the more the whys, the process, the conditions for it, then the mindfulness itself will become more effective. You'll be less caught, less tricked into it. So part of your reflections appropriately should be, I wasn't angry, now I am, what were the conditions that allowed that anger to arise? Oh, I was late and for an appointment, and so my frustration with being late and my, that was the condition that allowed me. My frustration was a condition that allowed me to get angry with the traffic, the other drivers. So that's the condition, right? What allowed me to let go of it? Oh, in that situation, what allowed me to let go of it was I saw what an amazing cost this anger has to me. I wouldn't even want my enemy to feel this bad. And so, well, then I just let go of it. And what are the conditions that prevent the anger from arising in the future? You know, it's gone now. What prevents it from arising in the future? Oh, I think that I need to be much more clear in my communications with my spouse, my partner. Because if we don't have that clarity, then it's too much easy for misunderstanding, and then we blow up. Something like that. So I'm just making it up here, I wanted to stress that here in the Buddha's instructions for mindfulness includes understanding more than just being present. It includes understanding the causes and conditions that come together for this. And finally, I want to say, in terms of this topic, is we'll do this one more day, one more month, next month. And it's my intention for my plans, at least for now. Next month, we should probably take a much better look at anger. Since anger is a variation, right, of ill will or aversion. And anger is certainly a juicy topic. And some people have manifestos about their opinions about anger. So prepare your manifestos. Polish them up, and then we'll include that. And And hopefully we'll look at anger in a way that is hopefully a little bit fresh and different from for all of you. So I want to thank you so much for coming and exploring this great topic. To me, it's really gratifying. That reminds me. So in terms of working with aversion, all the hindrances, but with aversion, I think even more so, all of them, a very important quality that supports the mindfulness, supports our working with them, is having confidence. So to have confidence that they're workable, have confidence in your ability to engage, even though it's not unfolding as quickly as you want. But to meet this whole topic with some confidence in the practice, in the possibility of working with it, of becoming free, and your capacity for it. And sometimes that's one of the key ingredients for finding a way forward with this, is to have confidence. So many, many thanks, and I wish you all well for the holidays.